comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I appreciate that. I'm here because you have a right to know, and I'm here because you matter. My guest this evening is none other than Richard Dolan. And every time Richard Dolan is with us, we have an absolutely fantastic show. Lots of information. Richard Dolan is a historian, and he has focused his academic research and his writings of history in our genre. And has, I think, done a great service for the whole field of ufology. Without people applying academic principles and academic research, you know, it would be a very chaotic field, and it was. Richard Dolan has done much to bring some order, I think you could say, to our field. All right, now, we're going to be talking in part tonight about a book that he has published, the latest book that he's got out there, I think, and it's called AD, After Disclosure. And I want to show you something. I want to ask you, those who are watching, to take a look at a picture. And I want you to see if you see anything anomalous in this picture as I zoom in on it. Now, you might be saying, well, that looks like my high school. Because it really kind of looks like, I don't know, a high school or some kind of official kind of installation. Let me zoom in a little bit more. Do you have any idea where this would be located, folks? Well, we have done, I'll give you this clue, we have done a show recently on its location. And we looked at other anomalous things in that location. And I will tell you more about this when we come back after this upcoming break. This is pretty astounding stuff, though, huh? And you might be saying, well, I don't think it's so astounding. I think that's sitting across the wheat field over there. Well, you'll see. We are going to talk about that in relationship to after disclosure. We're not going to focus on that, but it plays a part. If you are not yet subscribed to our K-Files, which is our free weekly newsletter, you need to do that. And you can do it right now. Just get over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, subscribe. You're going to get an automatic email with a link in it for you to activate that subscription. Be sure you do that, and you're good to go. We'll be back. Software just wanted to keep playing that song, didn't it? You know, that bumper music that you just heard was composed and produced by one of our members. And that's some pretty good stuff, isn't it? We got a lot of talented members here, I'm telling you. As I said, my guest this evening is Richard Dolan. And Richard, welcome back to the show. We're delighted to have you.
Hi, Kevin. Thank you. It's a pleasure. It really is.
You saw the pictures that I showed before the break.
Yeah.
And here's the tack I'm going to take with this. I'm going to explain where they are, and then I'm going to explain some things about these pictures, because they are not the focus of what we're going to talk about. They are an example. The pictures that I showed on our TV channel, and if you are a member, then you saw them, and you're seeing them now. These are from Tycho Crater. Now, we did a show recently where I showed you a complex on Tycho Crater. The picture that I was using was straight from NASA. It was, you go to Tycho, to their page for Tycho Crater. They have a full resolution photograph that you can download, and that's what I used. What you're looking at right now is from that same picture, but this is not my zoom. I did, after I saw these, zoom in. But I chose to use these because my software is not as sophisticated as the software used here to clear things up and put them in as much focus as possible. My software, when you zoom in a whole lot, does get pixelated. And so I decided to use these. But I did zoom in on this area, and I did see, I would have to say I saw this same complex. It's just that mine will not clarify it and as good as this. And so I decided to use these. This looks like somebody's high school. Or maybe a big hospital. I mean, this is pretty clear. This is pretty clear. If we zoom in a little more, even this software gets a little fuzzy and pixelated, but this is pretty amazing stuff. And I don't think anybody can say that is just natural formations. All right. Now, let's use these for an example. Understand that I'm putting a disclaimer on it. The disclaimer is this is not my work here. But I did zoom in on that area, and I did see this basic shape. It's not as clear as this. So could this be hoaxed? Maybe. But that's not the point. I don't think it is. After seeing what I saw with my software, I think this is accurate. But that's not the point. Richard Dolan, here's the point. Even if this series of pictures is somehow fake, and I don't think it is, you heard what I said about it, but even if it is, the point is we are finding, I have found, and I have shown on this show, things almost that dramatic and that clear, and in Tycho Crater and other places. So the point is this, with AD, after disclosure, a lot of people think disclosure in terms of some government announcement will never happen, and I say it's happening every day. With the exposure of pictures like this, and like the ones that I showed when I did the Tycho show, people are seeing that there are artificial structures on the moon, and they're seeing artificial structures on Mars, and people are tired of being told that a cow is a Cadillac. Their eyes see what they see. They know that what they're looking at is what they're looking at. I mean, no one has ever mistaken a Walmart for a beach ball. And if you try to convince them a Walmart's a beach ball, they're going to get upset with you. And yet, this is what happens to us all the time. We see structures that we know are artificial, and we hear some kind of baloney story. So I'm saying that disclosure is happening with pictures like that. It's happening all the time, and we may have reached a point of critical mass now. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree, I think, with every single thing that you have said on that matter, Kevin. I have never ever been of the belief that any government, that includes, and really especially the United States government, will ever voluntarily simply come out with the truth on whether it's UFOs or extraterrestrial life or life that's not us that is here interacting with us somehow on Earth. I don't think they'll ever voluntarily come out with that. And look, I mean, there's been almost 70 years now of opportunity for government representatives to do so, and they've declined to do so. So I think we can safely say that that's a policy, and it's not going to happen. But the fact is that they are not the only factors in this equation. They're not the only parts that are in motion here. Let's not forget these other beings, whatever they are, if they ever decide to out themselves. I mean, they don't seem to be doing that as a policy either. But as I have maintained for years, and what you really are saying here tonight, is that we, the people, are the real dynamic part of that equation. And we are, the day will come when our society gets to a point where we will be able to force an acknowledgement out. That's really what it's about. See, there will be a disclosure. There will be a day and a moment when, say, the President of the United States really, truly does come out with it. And he or she will say, yes, actually, this phenomenon appears to be real, or it is real, I've just been briefed, and whatever else comes next. And that's the moment of disclosure. Of course, as I've been saying, that's really the beginning, not the end, of the real battle to get truth out. But that's another, we can come to that when we get to it. But yeah, it's going to happen, and we will force it out. And it is things like this. Now, I'm looking at this Tycho crater image right now. I've just now found the high-res version of it, and I'm trying to find where in this high-res image that structured like object is.
I'll tell you, let's deal with that after the show. I will show you the area to look at.
By all means.
And the reason is it's a very tiny area, and you have to zoom in a bunch to get there. But we'll do that after the show, because I don't want the pictures themselves to become the focus of the show here. It's not my purpose for these pictures, for us to prove or disprove the pictures. I'm just using them as an example that this kind of stuff is coming out. And when I did the show on Tycho Crater just a couple of weeks ago, I used only the stuff that I personally zoomed in on, and I showed folks a facility in another part of the picture, and it is definitely there. This one, I think, also is definitely there. But the focus here is not whether these pictures are genuine. I think they are. But the focus is, this kind of stuff is coming out, so we're already into sort of after disclosure, aren't we?
Yes, I believe that's right. We're into an era which privatization and multinationalization of space is underway. We really have to ask legitimately who is running this international cover-up. Because it's not just the United States. We've got other nations in space. We've got Russia. We've got Europe. We've got India and China are making great strides.
And Japan?
You've got Singapore, which actually is, believe it or not, developing a presence in space. A lot of other nations. And then you have other companies, corporations. Now, we could hypothesize, at least for the time being, it might not be impossible for America's intelligence community to control most of that. Really, I don't think that's impossible. But forever? No, not forever. We're getting to a point where, as a society, we are getting out there. And look, already there are many, many good sources of information on space-based anomalies. On my own website, keyholepublishing.com, I have the legacy site of the late Jeffrey Challender. And Jeff Challender was died in 2007 and spent essentially his entire adult life collecting videos from NASA missions and then later European Space Agency and Russia and also China toward the end of his life, in which it sure as heck looks like there are some bizarre activities that are captured in Earth's orbit. A lot of those are explainable. I mean, there are things that happen in space that look anomalous and that are not. But I have to say, there's a whole lot of things that are going on in Earth's orbit that, to me, look like someone's got something that's not supposed to exist. So that's a problem. And I think this type of thing's only going to increase, not decrease. And now we're in an age where everyone's got access to high-resolution cameras on their phones. I mean, my iPhone's got an 8-megapixel camera on it. And the video capability is very good. It's not bad. It takes HD. We'll have cameras in the future, I'm sure, that we'll be able to do even beyond that, whether it's infrared or electromagnetic frequencies or who knows, honestly, you know, night vision. All of these capabilities are becoming widespread, and it seems to me it's a matter of time before we capture something, we record something that's going to be difficult to explain. And then the other sign of a society that's in constant revolution, you could look at, say, the WikiLeaks phenomenon. WikiLeaks didn't exist 10 years ago. WikiLeaks couldn't exist 10 years ago because we didn't have the global infrastructure for it. Well, guess what? We have that global infrastructure, and here it is. And you've got, you know, whether they're legal or not, or authorized or not, it's irrelevant. The organization is there, and it's yanking classified information out from the secrecy of governments around the world. So something's going to happen. If we really think that tomorrow is going to be exactly like today, well, I think we've got another thing coming. So things are in motion. Our society is in the greatest state of flux that human society has ever been in. There's no historical parallel, none, for what we're going through right now. So, you know, all we can expect is more change, radical change, and I think that will include a forced disclosure of the UFO reality. I don't like making predictions. In fact, anyone who knows me at all knows I hate predictions, but I'm going to make this prediction. I think within 20 years, and I think that's conservative, that this is all going to be out. We're going to be fighting the next battle, which is to yank those secrets out from the classified world.
Well, I would agree with you. I think it will be within the next 20 years. I'm not as conservative as you are on that. And I think we could be 2 to 3 years from it because, see, an interesting phenomenon in itself, mm-hmm. is NASA. NASA officially denies, but then they turn these pictures loose. And, you know, it's like, okay, we have to say this, but if you're smart enough to look, you'll find your own answers here. I mean, that's an interesting phenomenon.
Yeah. And we have to remind ourselves that something as basic to our lives as the internet really didn't exist even 20 years ago. There were, you know, a couple of bulletin boards. 20 years ago, there actually was not a World Wide Web.
Right.
20 years ago. You and I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people listening to this may not remember that. But that's the blink of a cosmic eye. And in that brief period of time, we have completely recreated our global civilization in ways that truly, even 20 years ago, I don't think could have been imagined. Mm-hmm. So obviously we have to assume the clock isn't just going to stop at year 2012. There will be a 2013, there'll be a 2020, there'll be a 2030. And your prediction of 2 to 3 years could very well be correct. Of course it could. This, you know, disclosure, the forced disclosure of this reality, one thing I do believe is that it's going to happen very suddenly, with little warning. So that it really could be a situation of Monday, you know, life has gone on the way it went on last week and the week before that, and that by Wednesday or Thursday or Friday, it could be completely upside down. It could just be a couple of days is all it takes. Little warning.
Well, what prompts me to say that I think it's going to be 2 or 3 years, you've already mentioned, and that's the involvement of all of these other countries and companies in space. What's interesting is, you know, the European Space Agency releases pictures. And their pictures, they go to Mars, they take pictures, they release their pictures. Their pictures are crystal clear. NASA tells us all the billions they spent to get there and what a high-resolution camera they're using. And theirs looks like, you know, some third grader shot the picture.
It's really true.
Yeah.
That's really true. The image we're talking here, this is European Space Agency. This is a NASA image.
This is a NASA image.
Yeah.
The original image is shot by the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. The point is, so when you see something in an ESA picture, in the European Space Agency picture, that looks very, very artificial, they don't comment about it. They don't make a big deal about it. They don't say anything about it. They don't hide it or airbrush it out either.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really care whether that embarrasses NASA. The same thing with the Chinese, and we have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Have to have a talk with that software. It keeps playing that bumper music too long. It's doing weird stuff tonight, but that's okay. It's kind of a weird show, you know. But my guest is not weird. My guest is Richard Dolan, and we're talking about AD, After Disclosure. That's the title of a book that he has written, and by the way, if you go to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and you'll see Richard's smiling face there. And right under that picture about tonight's show is a link that says Show Info. If you click that, it'll pop open a little blurb about Richard Dolan, and there's a link there to his website. So you can check that out. It's Keyhole Publishing, and Richard, is that keyholepublishing.com?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I was saying as we went to break that these other space agencies, you know, they're not commenting on stuff. They're not saying, oh, look what we found, ha ha ha, see here, NASA's been lying. They're not doing that. But
no,
they release the pictures. They do release the pictures.
They and release them. I don't really find a whole lot of or any mainstream media discussion on these. They just sort of become ignored.
Yeah,
seems to me.
Yeah, it does. You know, we showed a picture last night. I think it was last night, night before last, We showed a picture from the moon. The particular picture we showed was shot by the Chinese, although we have pictures of the same thing from NASA. And it shows a crane, a huge crane on the moon. And it's not one of those where you look at it and say, well, you know, I don't know. Well, you know, that could be this, it could be. No, you look at it, it's a crane. And you know, it's, and it looks, you know, pretty modern, robotic in style.
There are claims going way back of, you know, NASA airbrushing their photographs of the moon.
Yeah,
these were brought out through the testimony that was acquired by Stephen Greer over a decade ago, which some of that made it out to the disclosure press conference in 2001. And others were just other individuals who came forward. One was Air Force, I think he became a sergeant, Carl Wolf, Carl with a K, and he's probably one of the best known of them. You can find Carl Wolf on YouTube talking about this, and his story is essentially that he was a low-level Air Force guy, went to Dayton, Ohio, right at Air Force headquarters, where he sort of accidentally got himself in a room where this other individual was talking about the airbrushed photographs of the backside of the moon and showed them to Carl Wolf. Now, Wolf, every time he is told this story, essentially says the same thing, which is that he got scared because he realized that he didn't have the security clearance for these images. But in his view, this is, he said this for years, what he saw were definite structured objects on the far side of the moon.
Yeah.
I'll just tell you a story that I got from Russell Targ, who many people know his name. Russell was one of the two primary scientists who at Stanford Research Institute in the 70s was responsible for developing protocols to test remote viewers, which is another cool topic. We could probably spend hours on that one. But here's the thing about Russell. He said to me directly in a telephone conversation several years ago that in the early 1980s, he had been tasked to train remote viewers at Fort Meade, Maryland, and that's the home of the National Security Agency and also the Army's Stargate program where they were doing remote viewing. He said it was his job to train remote viewers whose job it was going to be to remote view the far side of the moon. Those were almost the exact way he put it. Now I'm on the other end of the phone, and I'm playing dumb. So I said, well, Russell, why would they do that? Gives a long pause. He says, well, Richard, why do you think? I said, well, I don't know. Are they looking for E.T.? He said, bingo. Yes, they were looking for E.T. I said, well, did they find E.T.? He said, well, that I don't know.
Yeah.
That wasn't part of his mission, he said.
Well,
so that's his story. You know, I believe him.
Ingo Swann wrote a book about remote viewing the far side of the moon. Yeah. Have you read that book?
Oh, indeed, yes. I read it. I spoke to Ingo about this particular story, which I assume that you're thinking of. And, in fact, I encapsulated that story for one of my volumes of history, UFOs on the National Security State, Volume 2. I wrote at some length about this. This is a fascinating story. Ingo Swann was really, I think, the first great remote viewer that was employed by CIA and by the rest of the U.S. intelligence community. This is back in the early 70s. The experiments that he did are famous, really widely famous and legendary within the remote viewing world. Ingo Swann was and is the real deal. And on one occasion in the mid-70s, this is going way back, he had a friend who said to him, now look, there's this big shot who's going to probably try to call you to have you do a mission. And my advice is that if he calls, you accept this mission because this guy is important. So Ingo is used to this type of thing, unknown, mysterious people from the intel world asking him to do this or that, and typically he'd get paid a certain amount of money, and that's what he did. He's like a freelance for a lot of these deep black intelligence groups.
Yeah.
So sure enough, he gets a phone call from a guy named Axelrod. That's the, how he's known. They arranged to meet, and his whole account of how he was brought to Axelrod is hysterical and creepy and probably true. He was told to go to the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. and stand by the elephant there. And these two guys approach him. They look exactly like twins, he said. Military twins. They don't say a word. They look at him. They grab his wrist and check for a tattoo that they knew he had. And then they motion for him to come with them. He gets blindfolded, put in the back of a car. He's definitely freaking out here. There's a female driver. And the four of them now go to this place. He gets out. He's still blindfolded. He's taken into a building, gets in an elevator, and goes down, 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 down. Really far down.
Yeah.
Gets out. Is brought, blindfold comes off, and he's face to face with this guy he only knows as Axelrod. He spends several days there. They pay him well, very well. And Axelrod asks him to remote view the moon. It's the first time that Ingo's had ever done this. And he apparently sees beings on the moon, gets frightened because he says, they noticed him observing them. And he basically screamed at Axelrod, says, what the hell are you doing? Those guys saw me. And he did a variety of protocols, remote viewing the moon, quite a bit. And there's much, much more to Ingo Swann's story. I will tell you this. I spoke with a scientist who knows Ingo fairly well. And who knows this story very, very well, and offered the opinion that the entire Axelrod scenario, there were a number of occasions in which Axelrod met with Ingo Swann, and all of them were really extraordinary, quite extraordinary. It was this scientist's supposition that Axelrod and the twins were actually not human, that they were, in fact, these other beings looked human, had superhuman capabilities, and what they were doing was conducting counterintelligence on Ingo Swann, basically, in this scientist's opinion, to find out how good were humans at finding them.
Ah.
So someone like Ingo Swann was able to find them, then they might have to think about this, because there probably would be other remote viewers as well. Now, that's only a theory. I don't know how much this scientist really knew. He might have known more than he was telling me. But he kind of offered that out to me as a hypothesis. I will just say this scientist is a very brilliant man. Now, Ingo's, Swann's opinion is that Axelrod and the twins were human, were part of some deep clandestine agency. But he never really explained how these two assistants looked exactly the same, acted exactly the same. I mean, they were, for all intents and purposes, apparently, twins. And that's a little odd, certainly.
Yeah.
So there's strange things about this.
Oh, yeah, there are.
But
okay, I want to ask you a question now.
Something on the moon, for sure.
All right. Now, this is and we'll only just begin to get into this before we get to a break. But I want to go ahead and dive in here. Let's say that tonight the president is watching this show. Let's say he saw those photographs that I showed.
Right.
And so by now there's all kinds of groups that have been assembled because he wants to know, are those real? And bring me the high-res photograph. I want all the information there is on Tycho
right.
Crater. I want to know if that's real. And then by morning, he has been briefed that, in fact, it is real. Let's say that happens. And let's say that the president says, all right, we're not keeping this from the American people. We're going to tell them. And tomorrow morning, we get up, and we turn on the morning news. We're having our morning cup of coffee. And there on the morning news, we see that everybody's at the White House. And they're ready for a press conference. And then they announce the president. He comes in, and he does an announcement that this is real and that there are people of some kind on the moon. What are we looking?
Well, I'm very doubtful that the president would do anything.
Oh, I am too. But let's say it happens. There's an official disclosure. Okay. And now we have official disclosure.
To overcome the hurdles of an entire national security establishment that would certainly, because look, presidents have been briefed.
Well, look, I know that. I know that. But let's get beyond that. Let's go to disclosure happens. Now we're definitely in after disclosure. How does the world change?
Well, the world becomes totally rocked by disclosure. There's no way around this. See, this is why there's secrecy on UFOs to begin with, because the end of secrecy on UFOs is going to change every single thing in our world, every single thing. And this is what amazes me. Like, people will say, oh, why are they holding back the secret? I can handle it. The truth isn't a big deal. No one's going to be shocked. That just tells me that these people haven't really thought it through. I had a long discussion with the author Daniel Pinchbeck about this, and we strongly disagreed. Daniel said, well, this is not a big deal. No one's going to be shocked. I said, well, first of all, people are going to be shocked. I don't know about you, but I have relatives, dude, and they're not all on our page. But secondly, being shocked is the most minor, insignificant part of disclosure. The significant part of disclosure is going to be the massive blowback politically, financially, culturally, socially, economically, geopolitically, forgetting for the moment who these other beings even are. That's a whole other issue. That's a whole other nightmare to deal with, who they are, what their intentions were. Let's just forget that for the moment. Put that aside. We can come back to it. Just on the basis of disclosure itself, it turns everything upside down. For example, the president goes on TV and says, yes, this is real. Okay. Well, what next? He can't go on vacation, or he'd love to. No, so what he has to do now is answer some questions. Here's a question. Who are these other beings, and do we have anything to be worried about? And let's just say
that... Okay, we have to step away for that break. So I told you we'd just be getting into it. All right, folks, we'll be back. It worked as it was supposed to this time. That's because during the break I made some adjustments. We'll see if they stick. Hope so. And we're sticking with this idea of what happens after disclosure. AD, after disclosure. That's the name of the book. And Richard Dolan, that is the name of the author of the book. Richard, did you have a co-author in this book too?
Yes, I did. Absolutely, I did. A very excellent author, Bryce Zabel. Bryce is a television producer and writer, probably best known for creating and producing the TV show Dark Skies.
And it's good. 90s. It's better than X-Files ever was.
Oh, yeah, I think Dark Skies was great. And he also did a lot of script writing for Steven Spielberg's Taken, which a lot of people, I'm sure, remember. Bryce is a very knowledgeable guy to work with, and it was very professional, very good to work with as well. We wrote this book. The original edition of AD was actually published at the end of 2010, and we were the publishers. I was a publisher with Keyhole, and we basically just signed a deal with a larger publisher that could get us some better distribution. So the book was, we went through a significant re-release, updating of the book. I did most of those edits myself, actually, and got it ready basically for 2012. I'm very happy with the book now.
Okay, so we're after disclosure, whether it's a presidential announcement or whatever, but
well,
it's happened.
Right.
It's going to
be,
however
it'll be a
it
mess.
Happens, what's the world like?
It's going to be a mess because, first of all, it's very... There's a very good likelihood that even the intelligence community caretakers of this problem, they probably don't know everything that we would like for them to know, in all likelihood, because look, all of the evidence of this phenomenon tells us that, that we're just outclassed by these other beings. They have technology that we can't seem to match. They've got certain areas of knowledge that are just so vastly beyond us that in all likelihood we're going to have many, many unanswered questions. And so the president is going to be in a position of being asked to answer questions that he or she really won't have answers to anyway. That's a problem. So there's, and people being people are not all going to take this information, this news well. But the real blowback is going to be, you know, in other areas. Like one standard political blowback is just going to be people asking, how the hell have you been able to keep this secret all these years? And after all, think about it. We've had a political global political community. We've had a global scientific community, academic community, journalists. All of these mainstream organs of the power structure, they haven't just been skeptical on UFOs. They've been outright, downright hostile to it. And there's going to be some serious questions asked about...
Yeah, like how can you be so stupid? Yeah, that's a good question to ask, you know, like
stupid.
CNN and NBC and CBS. How can you be so stupid?
Because they're not stupid. There's clearly there's intelligence community manipulation of all of those institutions. We already know this.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to get into UFOs to know this. There have been some very good, limited, but very good studies on the penetration of the academic community by the intelligence community. This is really not a radical thing to say, but it's all there. Same with the political community, same with the scientific community. The CIA and other intelligence agencies have long since dominated and penetrated the integrity of what we would like to call our intellectual life, you know, the academic world. That's it, and I mean, today we have basically a revolving door between academia and the national security community. It's almost out in the open. No one even cares anymore. The guy who wrote the USA Patriot Act, John Yoo, Y-O-O, what did he do? In 2003, after he left the Bush administration, went to teach at Berkeley. That's what they all do. So, but on a covert level, I think what happens is that you have certain powerful individuals who act as the guard dogs for the rest of the sheep. And they kind of keep people in order. I think this is exactly how it works. So anyway, all of this is going to be subject to investigation and analysis. But even worse than that, will be people will want to study the black budget, the classified world itself that has managed this. They're going to want to know, where has this secret been kept? And that's going to be a very uncomfortable moment within the national security apparatus, because these guys are going to be, they're going to be like little termites with light shone on them for the first time. And I guarantee you what they won't like about it is that it's going to highlight the vast illegality of the very structure of their existence, by the very nature of which has been unconstitutional, extra-constitutional. And they may seek to justify it, and I'm sure they'll have their own spin doctors that will do a good job of it, but the fact is it's going to be grossly unconstitutional, and you've got to know there's going to be a lot of widespread popular blowback against that. We're talking theft of probably many, many billions of dollars of funds, trillions maybe, in order to manage the secret. This is expensive stuff we're talking about. Because it's not just these people hiding the existence of extraterrestrials or whatever. In all likelihood, they've been hiding the existence of a plan to study and reverse engineer non-human technology, and that's a very expensive thing to do. It's going to be a big mess, and even that's just the tip of the iceberg. The real place where the rubber meets the road is going to be in energy, because even a 10-year-old looking at a, you know, a little bit about flying saucers is going to realize that, that they're not using petroleum to go from point A to point B. They're going to be using something a little bit better than that. Whatever that answer is, whether it's the exotic zero-point energy or something as relatively mundane as clean nuclear fusion, whatever the answer to UFO propulsion is, it ain't gas. And that implies the obsolescence of the largest industry in the world, the petroleum industry, which is trillions of dollars every year. When you look at all of the industries that are subsidiary to petroleum, it's massive. Mm-hmm. And it won't go away completely because we use petroleum to make plastics and other things. But two-thirds of the petroleum industry is directly related to energy, the energy sector, basically cars and all of that stuff. And look, implicitly, there's going to be a solution to the energy question within the UFO phenomenon. How long do we really think it's going to take? Even if we don't pry that secret out of the black world, once we realize that this stuff is real, you're going to have all of the mainstream scientists and physicists and chemical experts and whoever, they're going to be looking at this. And that answer is going to come out, and it's going to be out in the open. So, boom, end of the petroleum paradigm. That's huge. That changes.
Well, and yeah, with that, you have the if it happens suddenly, you have the sudden collapse of every economy on the planet.
You have the collapse of petroleum-based economy. My belief is that in the long term, this is actually going to be an economic boon. And the reason that that's long term. Long term. And the reason is that when you look at the history of economics of the past many centuries, you find a nearly direct correlation, especially in the last 200 years, between the cost and availability of energy on the one hand and economic growth on the other. So if you have cheap and abundant sources of energy, doesn't matter what else is going on, you will have substantial economic growth. If you have scarce and expensive sources of energy, does not matter anything else that's happening, you will not have significant economic growth, and you may have recession or depression. That's almost, you can take that to the bank. So with, let's say we find a solution in the UFO mystery that implies what we might call free energy. I mean, everyone talks about this. And something like that might be possible for all intents and purposes. Because clearly these objects they seem to be using to do the things that they do, to hover indefinitely, silently, to accelerate instantly, to make these types of incredible acrobatic maneuvers. It seems to me that they require tremendous amounts of energy to do it. So that would imply to me that there is a cheap, abundant source of energy. And if you've got that, then we're going to have a redesign of the global economy, one that actually I think will provide tremendous economic growth. But the caveat is there will be a great deal, I'd say, of disruption because of the petroleum sector. And not only that, ask yourself what will happen to nations that are right now predominantly, they get their income on oil, whether it's many of the Middle Eastern Muslim nations like Saudi Arabia or Iran or Iraq and so forth, or Venezuela. Well, I think what you're going to have is massive social unrest in those countries. When the petrodollars are not flowing in, you're going to have a lot of issues. And I think it will probably trigger. We saw the Arab Spring in 2011.
Now we have to take a break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we will be opening the telephone lines in just a moment because I know a lot of you would like to talk with Richard Dolan. You have a question or a comment, and we want to give you the opportunity to talk with him. But Richard, I want to make one observation that a lot of people, I think, haven't considered in terms of what's going to happen after disclosure, and that is the impact that it could have upon the so-called UFO community itself. In the And I use the word so-called because I don't think there is a UFO community. There are a lot of people out there who do have an interest in UFOs, but I've seen a lot of non-community activity, non-community behavior amongst them. But be that as it may, you've got, part of this so-called UFO community thinks that extraterrestrials are non-hostile, period.
Oh, right, right.
You've got another part who think extraterrestrials are hostile, and you got to be careful. And then you've got another part, like me, and I say, why would they be any different from us? Some of them are probably hostile, and some of them probably are not. So one way or the other, after disclosure, we're going to know, or we will begin to know, the truth of that. And there are people who have taken a position within this UFO field and have followed it religiously. It's a belief. Yeah. It's a tenet of their religion. And that is going to come crashing down. Two-thirds of the beliefs there, at least, are coming down.
Your belief that we're dealing with, let's say, multiple groups, multiple agendas, I think is probably the dominant belief at this point among researchers. It happens to be my belief as well, so we share that. Now, there are researchers who will take one side or the other, and we've all met both of those types of people with those viewpoints. But here's a real possibility that Bryce and I speculate about in AD After Disclosure, which is that, it's my own opinion, that we will in all likelihood get to a point in our society where we can force a disclosure. That is, like we were talking at the beginning of this interview, that something will happen, whether it's a photograph, a moon image maybe, or a UFO video, or a leak from WikiLeaks, or something else, something that will happen that will force an acknowledgement. However, that's very different from us having the ability to grab one of these beings and put them on next to the president at a podium. All right, so in other words, there still may be very many unsatisfying elements to disclosure, where we are not going to have all of the answers that we want. That's the thing that I think I discovered in the course of writing this book, which is that we had this idea of disclosure as giving us our answers, and in fact it may not give us our answers, and what the result may be is a series of debates, arguments, cultural wars that could very well last for generations. There's really no reason why it doesn't have to be that way. You have people, think of it this way. President makes a statement. So you'll have people on the one hand willing, like let's say some very new age oriented belief systems that will say, let's welcome the Galactic Federation of Light. They're only here to help us elevate our consciousness to the next density, let's prepare our light bodies, people. That's a very significant part of the very new age part of the UFO community, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Christian evangelicals on the other side who are going to be looking at these entities, I guarantee this, as primarily demonic. And you know what? There's no bridge long enough to cover that gap. None. So what you're going to have are these two groups and absolute antipodes of thought, and there's going to be endless numbers of variations in between.
Mm-hmm.
And how will this all be resolved? Good question. I don't know if it will be resolved. So we could go for the longest time, because these entities may not, just because we out them doesn't necessarily mean that they're just going to say, all right, you got us, here we are. Maybe not. Maybe they'll continue a policy of withholding themselves from an official relationship with us. It might be like, you and I are in the lowlands of Africa studying gorillas, and just because we're observing them doesn't mean that we're going to walk up to the dominant gorilla of the pack and say, hey, you know, we're humans, we want to establish diplomatic relations with you guys. It may not work that way, right? So they may not see us ever as equals on that basis. And if they're, you know, the gray aliens, if that's true, and I think it is true, they have never, ever shown an indication that they give a damn about our society. In all of the accounts of abduction literature, for example, there's never been a case of any of these aliens saying, so you guys really voted for George W. Bush? What's up with that, yo? Or Obama? That dude sucks. No, there's no, there is no concern or care about human politics at all. It's like it doesn't exist for them.
I should get along with them well then, because I have no concern or care about politics. I can promise you I am so apolitical. It's unbelievable.
Right? But they don't seem to care either. They don't care about a whole lot of things about our society that are important to us. And so it just seems to me that they're operating in a totally different psychological milieu than we are. My point simply is that after disclosure, these belief systems that you have or that I have or that other people have may not totally come crashing down. We may hang on to them more tightly than ever.
In my case, it's not a belief. I don't believe either one of those three positions. I think the most reasonable one is the one that says they're probably like us, and there's probably some good ones, there's probably some bad ones.
In other words, you're not holding tightly to it because you're someone who's able to have a suspension of belief, and I am too, I think. But and other people are, but not everyone. A lot of people just aren't that way. So there's going to be very strongly held opinions.
The apple cart will be upset for many people. I want to open up the telephone line, though, and allow folks to give us a call. And in fact, we have a call on hold. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are open, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you are in the USA or Canada, please use that number, 623-444-5889. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we have an additional option for you. That telephone number will work from anywhere in the world and probably anywhere in the solar system. But it's expensive to call international long distance from some places on the planet. And so we have this additional option called the flash message. If you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you may use that option by going to my website. Scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and above the picture is a link that says flash message. So let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Ryan in Washington here. Hi, Richard, this is Ryan.
Hello, Ryan.
Oh, hi, Ryan. I believe I know this gentleman.
Oh, yeah, I called you the other day and talked
to you. How are you, Ryan?
Kevin, did you know that your radio feed was down or might still be down?
I'm not surprised, though, and I thank you for telling me that, and we'll give it a shot here and see if we can get it back.
Well,
we are being interfered with.
If it has been offline. But, Richard, I had a question for you, and it has to do with the time period of preferably the late 80s. During your research for your book, what do you think about that time period? We had Ronald Reagan as president. We had Bob Lazar come out. We had that show UFO Cover-Up Live, and now we find out who the Falcon was, Harry Rosicky. What do you think the reason was that UFO Cover-Up Live was broadcast live both in Russia or the Soviet Union and the United States?
Great question. UFO Cover-Up Live, I remember watching that as it aired. That was in October 1988. Ronald Reagan was just about to leave the White House, It was just before the election that took place between George Bush Sr. and Michael Dukakis. Remember that? So it was October 1988. Bob Lazar actually didn't hit the scene until a year after that. But still, I mean, the basic time period is you know, pretty close. And by then, George Bush was president. Yes, what we know, I mean, here's the thing. What it absolutely looks like is that we were dealing with a kind of controlled disclosure by the U.S. government. I think what is happening, this is the opinion, by the way, of my colleague Grant Cameron, who I'm publishing a book by Grant that's coming out in a couple of months, and this is one of his conclusions as well, is that what you've had over a period of many years is a kind of controlled situation where some information is allowed to leak out, however, in such a way that it is always denied by the intelligence community and always deniable. So that what you have is a kind of slow seeping out of information. And I think that's the best theory that I can think of right now. Because think, you know, Kit Green, who's was a high-level CIA officer for many years. In fact, at one time, briefed Ronald Reagan on certain matters while Reagan was president. Kit Green is deeply interested in UFOs. And put it this way, he said, look, if you were an insider and you had all this information, how would you release this information to the public if you believe that the public had to learn? Would you really release all of it at once? Would you really, what if some of the information was really bad, scary? How would you do this? So you would do it by degrees, and you would do it where some information is true and some of it is not true. So Harry Rositsky was a very high-level CIA guy. You know, the thing, he was very much involved in the MJ-12 documents that appeared in the release of those documents. Many people at the time accused UFO researcher Bill Moore of fabricating those documents. Philip J. Klass, the arch-debunker skeptic, either implied or overtly accused Moore at various times of forging those documents. And if for anyone who doesn't know, the MJ-12 documents were allegedly signed by Harry Truman. They talked about the reality of the ET situation and all of this. But in fact, we know that Moore's source, who was nicknamed the Falcon, was this guy, Harry Rositsky, who answered to the highest level CIA personnel, very possibly Richard Helms himself, who was a former DCI. Richard Helms is about as high up as you go. So that this would be an initiative that came from the top, the release of the MJ-12 documents, and all of these other little tidbits of information reaching out, making it to the public. I think that the UFO cover-up live TV show, which you keep, people have to remember, I mean, you
Richard,
can watch
keep in mind we have other callers.
Well, let me, I'll just, it's goofy to look at, but in the context of 1988, that TV show was a bombshell, and in fact, I think it was there to gauge the reaction of the public. Anyway, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you, Ryan. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Tony from Norman.
Hello, Tony.
How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
And Rich, how are you doing?
Very well.
Great,
sir.
To have you on as a guest.
Thanks.
I have a couple of things for you. First, Truman announced disclosure that these craft were coming from, they weren't built by anyone here on this planet. I believe it was in 52. And then I have something after that.
Okay, so.
Well, let me reply to that first. I believe actually it was a 1950 press conference that you were referring to, when Harry Truman was asked on camera, and you know, on at least not on camera, but with reporters there,
yeah,
his opinion on these so-called flying saucers, which is what they were called at that time. And his answer, and I'm just paraphrasing, is that, you know, if they're real, they're not built, but we didn't make them. Truman never really explicitly disclosed that UFOs were real. He was interested in it. We know for a fact that he was being briefed on UFOs. We have that as a matter of public record by his Air Force liaison at the time, who was a colonel and later general, Robert B. Landry, who said that he briefed Truman in conjunction with CIA quarterly on UFOs for 4.5 years, from 1948 until the end of Truman's presidency. We know this. But Truman himself publicly never said that UFOs were real. And I have his two volumes of memoirs, and flying saucers don't appear in that thing, in those memoirs at all. So I think, I mean, that's a statement that he did make, but has been twisted, in my opinion, out of context to make him appear to say something that he actually wasn't saying.
Well, I'll defer to you on that anyway. Second thing is, you saw the pictures on the beginning of, in the beginning of the show?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at, in fact, I've got that image right in front of me as we speak.
Doesn't one of those buildings look like the Sonderling?
Look like,
or the Ross building?
Say it again. Doesn't it look like what building?
The Ross building or the Sonderling building?
Who is this?
Or maybe St. Anne's.
This is someone I grew up with. Who is this again?
Tony. From Norman. I used to live in Brentwood.
Well, okay. People listening need to know this. I grew up in Brentwood, Long Island. And, did we graduate at the same time, Tony?
No, I think I'm probably a little older than you. I'm not sure.
I graduated high school.
But we've spoken a couple of times.
1980. I just turned 50 this summer. Well, that's funny. Brentwood, Long Island, for the record, if you were to find a map of Long Island and put your finger right in the dead center of Long Island, you'd probably hit Brentwood. So that's nice. It's a nice to hear a countryman on the radio, huh?
Okay, Tony. Thank you for the call.
Those images that Kevin showed, I have to say, Kevin, they are very interesting to me. And it makes me want to investigate. I think I may have found it on this high-res image, incidentally. We'll have to compare notes later.
Okay. Let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
I'm going to present this situation, then I'll hang up.
All right.
The disclosure, if it happens, would be a boon, in my opinion, to the people who want one world government. Because the governments of the world would be in a panic. The one world government people would say, all right, let's all unite. We are one country, we are one planet. We're all against, all facing this common quote-unquote threat. And then you look at what Wernher von Braun's last warning. The last ploy will be the flying saucers, the extraterrestrials. So if that happens, if disclosure happens, they would try to portray them as an enemy. That would make it very difficult to get the truth out about who and what they really are. I'd like your comments. Thanks.
Thanks for the question. First of all, regarding one world government, I want to say this. Whether you or I do or don't like globalization, it's happening, man. And there's not a thing that you or I can do to stop it. It's been happening for 500 years. It hasn't just been happening since the birth of the Illuminati or the Bilderbergs. It's been happening since Christopher Columbus set foot on the New World and probably before that. what we've developed inevitably is a closer and closer and closer economic and financial and political integration of all the nations of the world, so that the separate civilizations that had once existed don't really exist like the way they did in the past. In an era of where you can make a Skype call to any place practically in the world, where financial transactions by the trillions are made via computer, what is sovereignty in such a context? I ask myself this question all the time. I remember my training originally isn't as a ufologist, it's as a historian and someone whose real love is in political theory and political studies. So I ask myself, what is the actual, true structure of power in this world? Not the make-believe stuff that we're taught in sixth grade government class, but the actual structure of our power. And I don't have a total handle on it, by the way, but it's not the era of nation states. I have news for you, man. Nation states are dead. They don't exist. What you have is a body that's dead lying on the road, but simply because he's wearing the clothes he had on last week, we think, oh, well, nothing's different. Well, the body's dead. We're just wearing the clothes of the nation state. Now, that's not good or bad. To me, the way I look at globalization is, globalization can look like fascism, or if we do it right, it can look something like freedom. And that's something that people are going to have to get uppity about. We're going to all have to make our voices heard and not accept a global fascism, which is very clearly happening. It's developing. Now, to deal with, let us say, let's pretend that there is a real extraterrestrial presence here, okay? Unless you firmly believe that they are all good guys, that every one of those beings has your best interest at heart, you're going to have to think that this is a challenge, and it's going to have to be a challenge that will need to be met in a coordinated international fashion. I don't see how one gets around that. So if you want to call that one world government, call it what you want. But it seems to me that we're going to have to deal with the challenge of these other beings in something like a coordinated way. And I think it's up to us to make sure it doesn't look and feel and act like fascism. Now, I don't have every single answer to this, all right, but that's how I'm looking at it. I think for us to assume that each little state, nation state, is just going to be able to do its own little thing. First of all, they don't do that now.
Right, we have to step away from break. We will be back, folks, right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is none other than Richard Dolan. And we are talking about the things that will take place, the changes that will happen after disclosure. Richard has written a book about that. He's one of the co-authors. Bryce Zibel is the other author. And the book is called AD, After Disclosure. Now, before we get too far away, I want to come back to what we're talking about with globalization. I'm going to play the devil's advocate here, and let's see where this goes. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. So give us a call and join the fun. Okay, so I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. You have already described for us how far advanced whoever it is that makes these UFOs, whoever it is that flies them, their technology is so far advanced that we are basically just insignificant. And you said that, you know, we will perhaps never be on any level with them sufficient to have some kind of diplomatic relations with them. So let's assume that's the case and assume that they are that far advanced. In that case, the idea that we have to globalize government and economy in order to deal with the challenge is a moot point, because if they're that far advanced of us and we're never going to be on any level with them that we could have some kind of diplomatic relations with them, then globalization for the purpose of meeting the challenge is an exercise in futility, because we're not going to be able to meet the challenge, period. Therefore, since we're not, the only thing that can happen with globalization is what's happening now with all of this crap that's being pumped out of Washington, D.C. about terror, 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 terror. There's terrorists here, terrorists there, under every bush, under every tree. They ordered 40,000 bullets for the NOAA, the Weather Service. They ordered over 100,000 bullets for the Social Security Administration. There's just terror everywhere. And so they scare the hell out of everybody and say, but don't worry, we are going to take care of it. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Put me on the list, Janet. Nonsense. Anybody can see through that smoke. So if they are that far advanced of us, globalization for the purpose of meeting that challenge is yet more nonsense. That's the devil's advocacy on this. What do you say about it?
First of all, you know, I absolutely want to agree with the tone of what that last caller was saying, in the sense that, and what you're saying too, Kevin, which is that disclosure could very well go down a dark road here. I think we can all recognize this. Our world is going down that dark road right now. Seems that way. And there is no inherent reason why necessarily it will stop. But here's what's going to happen, at least in my opinion. There's going to be a significant crisis globally. And it's going to be, you know, we saw the Occupy movement spring up. We saw the Arab Spring occur. I think what is going to happen with disclosure is something much larger than those movements. And there will be, a kind of an Occupy Area 51 movement, if you will. I think that's going to happen. So, like, let's say a hypothetical president on the spot is going to have to make a decision. He can either clamp down and use those hollow-pointed bullets against the millions of citizens who are up in the streets demanding change, demanding truth, or that president may not feel that he's going to win that battle and may have to make some decisions. In other words, the only way freedom is going to be won is by fighting for it. Now, the other reason, by the way, though, that globalization, I hate that word, but why global cooperation might be necessary has nothing to do with these ETs. Has to do with energy and power. I mean, think of it this way. Let's say we come to a point where we discover the free energy solution. Okay, well, you have people in the UFO field thinking this is our utopia. Stephen Greer has never failed to talk about how free energy is going to save humanity's sorry collective ass out from wherever it is, and we're going to make the deserts bloom, as he has put it, and all of these other wonderful things with free energy.
Okay.
I don't have such a view of free energy. I think free energy could be a very nice thing for us, and in fact can do wonderful things. We can engage in things like toxic remediation with a clean and free energy, I think, and a lot of other good things. But it's also, I think, very likely that any source of energy that can heat your home forever for free can very likely be converted by some smart fellow into a weapon that can blow up oceans or cities or nations.
Sure.
In other words, what we're talking about is unleashing technologies that are going to require strict controls over their dissemination, if for no other reason than to prevent some idiot from blasting half of us to kingdom come. And I don't see any way around this. In other words, UFO technology is going to be easily convertible into terrifying weaponry. Now, of course, we're going down the road. We've got the U.S. developing, they're going to be developing Terminator cyborg drones, for all I know, that can invade your home and mine and listen to you 24/7 and, who knows, kill you if you say the wrong thing. So we're already going down that road, but it does seem to me...
It's already developed. Japan developed it. It's called Kuritas.
Yeah. Right, I was just reading about this.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, look, man, I don't have any answers better than what you have or this caller had. What I see, though, is that it's going to be up to us. You can't stop globalization. I guess that's my point. Anyone who thinks they're going to stop this is a fantasy. All right? It's here.
I agree with that.
So we have to control. It's up to people to make it. And I don't think people would really like it if it went away, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, you want a cheap cell phone, or you want international friends. Look, that's globalization. And all of those require bureaucracies. All of those require vast global interconnectedness. Like it or not, that's the name of the game. So really what we have to do is understand how actually to have a global economy. In the UFO field, and not just UFO field, in the alternative community research field, I hear all kinds of things that I just think are so utopian as to be utterly empty-headed. I've had friends talk to me about a world with no money. I mean, they believe this. A world with no money. Well, sounds great. Let's all, you know, put flowers in our hair and strip naked and just hold hands and sing songs, man. But in an actual world where there's going to be an economy and there's going to be a need to eat and a need to have shelter, I mean, you tell me how such a human economy is going to come about. There are other people who take it even further, and they believe that there's going to be something like an ascension of humanity. And you've heard this for 2012 being predicted. And some of these people believe that you're going to shed your mortal coil and develop some kind of light body. And that's a belief that some people have, and that's very nice. No more need for war and for food and for hunger and for strife. We'll just become something other than human. Well, all of these I see as utterly escapist. And what we really need to do, if we're going to be grown-ups and look at this world the way it is to recognize that we've developed a political economy, a global political economy, that unfortunately isn't like the civics class lessons that we learned in school. It just isn't like that. So what we have to do is the first order of business, it seems to me, is to understand what it is the hell we've got. And then, you know, really understand it. I mean, most people are just so utterly ignorant anyway. They spend their time following football. I mean, you talk to regular guys about the NFL. I mean, I live here in Rochester, New York, so a lot of folks are Buffalo Bills fans. And I'll tell you, man, these guys, intelligent people, could talk to you for hours about the prospects for the Bills for the upcoming season and why the defensive line is kind of weak and why the schedule is kind of sucky and why we quarterback situation is good and all these details which require some sophistication to follow the NFL. You can't just dive into it, right? And yet you ask these same people about the actual the structure of power in this world, and the best they're going to give you is the latest garbage that they've heard either on CNN or Fox News or whatever. And they know nothing or less than that. And that, unfortunately, and even for those people who've gone to college and have actually spent time studying this, in my view, most of them are just brainwashed anyway into, you know, New York Times, Wall Street Journal version of reality. And they don't get farther than that. So we've got, we have a world in which most adult humans do not have the slightest clue, in my view, of how our world operates. I mean, I spent almost 24/7 trying to figure it out. I know I'm not there. So it is difficult. But what we need is a new conceptual basis. We need a new set of conceptual tools to try to understand this world. Anyway, I fear that I'm getting a little off course here. But in terms of getting a handle on globalization, it just seems to me that we, all of us, need to look at this a little more clearly. I mean, I'm a Ron Paul supporter. So, in other words, the reason I support him is because he's the only American political candidate who actually is truthful, in my opinion, and who is willing to look at problems in a very clear way. But no one, not Ron Paul, not anyone, is going to stop globalization from happening. So we have to make it as responsive to people as we can. And that's our task.
Well, one of, you know, I have these little sayings that I use. I call them Kevinisms. And one of my Kevinisms is, got your surfboard ready? And the meaning of that is pretty simple. And you never want to be far from your surfboard. A tsunami of change is going to hit. You don't know when, and you don't know exactly how it's going to hit in your area. But you better have your surfboard ready, and you better take the ride of your life, because otherwise it will overwhelm you.
Well, and by that, maybe we can take it to mean, let us not get overly attached to certain ideas and concepts that we have, because we're in a world that is changing so rapidly. You know, there's an old saying, which is that you can never be as radical as reality itself. In other words, we live with an ideology, almost all of us, let's say all of us. We're all born at a certain time, and we are taught values by our parents, of course, who lived in an earlier time than we do. And we evolve a bit, and we realize that, well, we live in a somewhat different world than our parents did, yeah. But we still have an attachment to those values, which often is a very good thing. But meanwhile, we're in a world that has changed so radically, so that we have obsolete political terms. In America, we talk about liberals and conservatives.
We have stepped away for a break, but we'll pick up there when we come back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Richard Dolan. And Richard, we are on final approach. We only have a few minutes left, and we do have a call on hold. So I want to go straight to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Richard. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Okay, John.
Hi. I don't actually have a lot to say, but I just thought I would call in. One thing I've noticed about Richard's positioning is, like, he's got, Richard, you've got your feet on the ground, and you're politically aware. At the same time, you're dealing with the UFO issue. So I would think that's a really difficult line to walk.
I made a really nasty bed, and I got to lie in it now. Well, it's how I got into this whole thing. See, I backed into the UFO field about 20 years ago through the field of history and politics. So, you know, prior to that, I wasn't any kind of UFO expert, or even with any particular strong interest in it. But I I was doing a doctoral dissertation, actually, on Harry Truman and the Cold War and his attitude toward the Soviets and the birth of the CIA and all that stuff. And then became obsessed. Obsessed is the right word, with UFOs. It was beyond interest in the early 1990s, and I just could not let it go. So for me, approaching this topic has always been a political act first and foremost. And the most important thing for me to understand in the early years, and it's still really probably my most important thing, is to understand how this whole cover-up really works. Like, what's going on? Yeah, that's important. But how is it that our political systems become so perverted and twisted as to hide this massive reality? So, it's not something that I was able to figure out immediately. I still haven't figured it out fully, but I've developed a number of theories about it. Most recently, I've been working this idea of what I call a breakaway civilization. And I think I'm onto something there. I don't have total proof, but what I postulate is that within the classified world, that the element that deals with this UFO reality has become so advanced technologically, just by virtue of the tech that they've been studying, that they're dealing with revolutionary, almost by our standards, magical tech, and with a cosmological reality that's very, very much in advance from what the rest of us deal with, so that they could be realistically considered a separate civilization. Now, I could be wrong about certain things that I think that they can do. After all, I look at someone like Henry Kissinger, who's approaching 90 years of age and looks bad, and I'm thinking, if there's life extension technology, he would be a good candidate to get it, but doesn't seem to be getting it. So maybe they don't have the kinds of advances in biotech that I occasionally speculated. But I do think that there's radically advanced technology in the classified world, and I do think that they're dealing with a kind of reality that we're not dealing with. So essentially, the way I look at our political world today is that there's, you've got the window dressing, that is the president and your Congress, and that goes for all countries. It's all window dressing. And what you have behind the power is massive financial power. But really, even that financial power is incredibly top-heavy. So you've got, really, as it's been for a while, a few dominant families globally, maybe a couple hundred, who really have the predominant power. And it's my suspicion that those same loci of power have predominant information and power over the UFO reality. And that this is an international game now that's being managed by very powerful people on a global stage behind the scenes. Can't prove it, but that's what it looks like to me.
Hey, Kevin?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know if you were gone or not, or what. Yeah, go ahead, John.
Your logic is really powerful and concise. So I can appreciate it. But what I would add to that is, I think there's forces at play right now that are going to mix it up. So what feels like inevitable, and what feels like the powers that be that look like they're in control, I don't think it's going to go down the inevitable route that way. I think there's other things at play here, and also, like, say you and I and Kevin are having a conversation. Well, we don't have that kind of wealth. So does that mean like we're going to be losers down the road? I don't think so, because we've got our own being aliveness and being aware and checking things out. I don't think we're necessarily subject to what the powers that be want for the masses. I really don't think that.
Well, I agree with you. I think you're exactly right. Think of energy once again. See, energy to me is a really huge part of this, because if we do get like a free energy, I was talking about, oh, well, we may need to globalize even more to control the dangerous weaponry and all, whatever. But the fact is, it's probably going to be a lot messier than that. And that free energy, if something like that gets out, like if you get access to free energy, you become a very independent sort of person. Because you very likely are going to have all kinds of solutions available to you in your life that you don't have now, and you are not necessarily going to have much of it, as much need for a government to protect and control you in a future energy and technological world of 20, 30 years from now. You might be able to have the ability to go off planet, take your own little supply of oxygen-generating machines with you, and create a base underneath the surface of the moon, for all I know. Crazy as it sounds, but maybe not so crazy. So in other words, people will be harder and harder to control, very likely. And I don't know where that's all going to end. It could end in total anarchy and chaos and death, or it could end in something that's better than that. I don't know. And then the other thing that's going to happen is, like I mentioned before, there's going to be a lot of angry people after disclosure. And they're not necessarily going to be angry at the ETs. Maybe they will be. I think abductions are going to be a very difficult topic to ignore, and I think there will be a lot of fear and anger there. But there's going to be a lot of anger that many people direct against the entrenched political systems. I don't think we should underestimate this. Now, yes, there's going to be very strong initiatives by those elites to fasten down global fascism. Yes, they're doing it now. But see, think of this. Is there anything that has the capacity to wake up an entire world of sleeping people? Well, maybe this does. Maybe this is the thing. The reality that is dropped like a bomb on the consciousness of 7+ billion people, that holy crap, there are these other entities here, and they don't operate like us, and they're at a way more advanced level than us, and they're doing stuff here, and all these things are going on. People are going to look at their world, and they're going to look at themselves too, by the way, and a lot of people are going to say, holy crap, have I just been wasting my entire life watching American Idol or football or doing whatever? I think there's going to be a lot of wake-up moments there. And people's consciousness, there's a word we love to use, but consciousness is going to be very much elevated.
I wish we had more time, but we don't. We have hit the end of the show. It's coming up on us here in a very few seconds. And Richard, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. And I want to thank you for giving us your thoughts and giving us of your time. And if you will, just stay on the phone or on the line with me here for just a moment as we bring this in for a landing. Well, there's a lot of stuff, folks, on both sides of the fence here. I don't like globalization, period. I can't stop it either, period. So I have to deal with it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.